Out of respect for the people who are here at the top of the hour, let's call to order the House Committee on Land Use for Tuesday, February 10th, 2009. I'll also open a public hearing on House Bill 2229. Purpose of today's public hearing is for the committee to benefit from ideas, suggestions, reactions, thoughts, support and objections from members of the public, and that's our purpose today, is to listen to you, not to do a lot of talking ourselves. A couple quick things to remind the committee of as we get going. First of all, there is a document that I believe has been distributed to all of you from Richard Whitman, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, that I want to acknowledge is received into the public record on this bill. It is an answer to a question that Representative Clem had asked at a previous hearing on this bill. So if it doesn't satisfy the question that was asked, let us know and we'll get more information, but I think it's an attempt to answer that question. Second, consistent with our previous hearings on this bill, we want to verbally acknowledge written testimony we have already received and put that officially into the record. Normally our two vice chairs read through that list, but since we have only one vice chair today, it is all yours, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, we're going to put in the record information that we have received, and I will now introduce those. Ken Barker, Virginia Bowers, Francis Chappell, Pete Colt, Gordon Inyard, Lynn Gearhart, David Harrison, Mike Hollowell, Lee Insko, Claire Clock, Cameron LaFollette, I'm sorry for slaying that, Deborah Luer, Jay and Elizabeth Medley, Linda Nettlekoven, Jeremy O'Leary, Kate Pearl, Gerald Powell, Leonard Rydell, Rand Shenick, David Swanson, Ann Bellis, Flegel and Marge Walters, Stephen and Penny Weber, Jim Weigert, Tom Bender, Brent Carpenter, Wade Childress, Mark Dorman, Paula Friedman, Nuis Gould, Sally Holloman, Tom Huxley, Tom Jaskowski, Leo and Karen Kuntz, Robert Latham, Sam Lowry, Keith and Janet Nash, Tony Nielsen, Howard Payne, Dennis Phillips, Mark Reber, Bill Shagany, Linda Short, Lon Swenson, Mary Vogel, Robin Wisdom, John and Polly Wood. So we will enter that into the record and be part of the record.
Thank you, and it will be part of the record for this bill. Today's hearing is structured so that we can provide time during the normal business day to listen to those of you who are here now, and then we will recess at about 4 o'clock to reconvene at 6 o'clock to run until 8, so that we allow people who cannot be here during the business day to also have an opportunity to testify. So committee members, if you'll remember, that's what we agreed to do in order to accommodate those other witnesses. And now, if I could just let those who've testified, who want to testify, if you haven't signed up yet, I hope you will take advantage of the sign-up sheet on the side. I will call people in panels of three to come to the witness table. Speakers may submit copies of their written testimony if you would like, and we will make it available to members of the committee. We are asking each witness, each person who wants to speak, to limit your comments to 2 minutes so that we can hear from as many of you as possible. Ms. Ross will give you a 30-second warning when your time is getting close so that you know to wrap up your thoughts. If you would please When you first start speaking, give us, for the tape recording, your name and the county where you reside. If you are speaking on behalf of a group, please let us know that when you start your comments as well. So, committee members, with that, I will get started with the first panel. Let's call Christine Lewis, John Brosi, and David Harrison, Dr. David Harrison, to the witness table. And just so that you know and can be ready, on deck we will have Evan Manville, Jeff Hunter, and Mike McCarthy. Ms. Lewis.
For the record, my name is Christine Lewis. I reside in Clackamas County, and I'm here speaking only for myself. Chair Nolan and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today, as we Oregonians are about to launch into a celebration of our state's sesquicentennial. I think it's important to recognize that the Beach Bill and Senate Bill 100 are at the core of the legacy we celebrate. The notable 2007 election turnout and the remarkable level of engagement I witnessed as Clackamas County staff of the Measure 49 campaign prove that these issues resonate still today. I attended the Big Look public forum held at the University of Portland, and I wish more of my friends and neighbors had been able to attend such an event, but there was limited opportunity to comment in person. Folks in my neighborhood of Milwaukee might have brought up concerns with a big box store proposed just up the road from us. Friends further south are concerned with growth pushing up against the UGB, and other rural areas in the county are facing overdevelopment of areas with limited groundwater. It seems like the county has appropriate flexibility as is without needing to redefine farm and forest land as outlined in Chapter 3 of the Big Look's final report. I don't see a need for such a significant change that uproots such a basic tenet of our system. Finally, I would like to offer one final comment regarding the task force's omission of global warming in their legislative recommendation. I urge you to support legislation that considers the effects of climate change in the long-range plan. We need real leadership, not only in preventing global warming pollution, but careful planning with an eye to alleviating predicted future stresses stemming from climate change. Your leadership is necessary to ensure that my generation will grow old in the Oregon we love, with sound land use planning, healthy natural resources, and vibrant, livable communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Brosi.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Brosi. I'm been practicing land use planning since Senate Bill 100 started, since 1973. You might say I grew up with Senate Bill 100. So that totals 36 long years, 6 years with cities and in the private sector as a consultant since then. Nobody in this room loves our state more than me. I was born here. I intend to stay here. I'd like to make some brief comments, maybe some different ideas that you may not have heard. First off, I think in order to make any meaningful change in the land use system, you have to tackle the annexation process. That's usually outside of what land use planning panels do, but the land use the annexation process in Oregon is convoluted, it's cumbersome, it's very conservative, anti-city in most of the times. Voter-approved annexations. There's not one practicing public sector planner that would tell you that that's anything other than anti-land use planning. It's wrong-minded populism, needs to be done with. I think the state needs to have the courage to deal with that and understand how wrong-minded that whole thing is. It destroys all the process, all the planning that was built up to a time before something goes to the voters. When it comes to rural lands, I'd like you to consider a tool that is being used by some counties called the non-resource plan designation. It deals with the most egregious bad mapping situations that came out of the rush to adopt comprehensive plans in the mid-80s. Jackson, Douglas, Lane County, and Linn County have done that. It does work, and it's been acknowledged by the state. It's a good tool. And that concludes my comments. I look forward to the work that you have. I don't envy your position, but thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Dr. Harrison.
I'm David Harrison. I'm a resident of Marion County, a constituent of Representative Clems. I'm speaking here today on behalf of the 1,600 members of Salem Audubon Society, of which I'm the president. There are some elements of this bill that I support, such as a provision to have key state agencies develop a strategic plan to coordinate efforts with regard to land use, transportation, and economic development. However, I'm deeply concerned by proposals to allow counties to redefine farm and forest lands. I know from my own dealings with county officials that local decisions on land use are heavily tilted in favor of private property owners and developers, and that often public interest loses out in that process. Allowing counties to rezone farm and forest lands will increase rural sprawl. It will adversely impact Oregon's multi-billion dollar agriculture industry and will exacerbate gas emissions which contribute to global warming. Oregon's land use system has been a great success. Yes, it does need to be improved, but let's not weaken it. I support adoption of the task force's recommendations to create better planning and new performance measures, but I urge you not to allow counties to redefine farm and forest lands. Let's create a stronger, more effective land use system. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Thank you all. Let's invite Evan Manville, Jeff Hunter, and Mike McCarthy to the witness table. And on deck, we'll have Polly Wood, Anne Marie Peer, and Ivan Molesky. Mr. Manville.
Thank you. For the record, Evan Manville, representing the Oregon Conservation Network. I reside in Multnomah County. Chair Nolan, members of the committee, I represent the Oregon Conservation Network, which is a coalition of 50 conservation groups, which collectively includes over 100,000 Oregonians. And over the 1,100 bills that have already been introduced this session, we have only designated one as a major threat to our environmental legacy, and that's this bill in its current form. We share a lot of the concerns that you heard about last week about sections 5 through 8 of the bill. And to preface my concerns, I'd like to note I have a great deal of respect for local governments and local elected officials. I've worked for a county government. I've worked with a lot of local governments. And I helped elect my father to city council in Fort Collins, Colorado. I have a great deal of respect. That said, our concerns are fourfold. First, the possibility these provisions could lead to increased costly sprawl across our working landscapes that you've heard. Secondly, there's some extremely vague language in the measure that creates discretion so broad as to be meaningless and unhelpful. What is a significantly adverse effect included but not limited to, and then a laundry list of things, what's going to be added into there, et cetera. Third concern, there are drawbacks of having several disparate land use systems separated only by county lines. Our current land use system recognizes differences as far as city sizes, as far as soil qualities, as far as Willamette Valley versus other, but county lines seems like a somewhat arbitrary way of creating different land use systems. And fourth, the dynamic the bill sets up between local governments and the Land Conservation Development Commission and DLCD, especially around predictions around the future. I've explained this in my testimony that when we've done this in the past, we asked cities to predict their growth, and they were off by 145% on average. And LCDC acknowledged those plans and those predictions. So we've got some tensions, and LCDC will either be forced to use a lot of resources and do their own projections and fight local governments who've worked hard to create their plans, or they'll just hand it over to local governments, which defeats the idea of having statewide goals and standards. So,
Mr. Mantle,
with that,
your time.
Thank you.
Thank
I apologize.
You.
Thanks
you.
For your time.
Mr. Hunter?
Thank you. My name's Jeff Hunter. I'm from Hood River Valley. I'm with the Hood River Valley Residents Committee, which is a 30-year-old organization that defends farmland and forest land in our valley. I speak to House Bill 2229. The legislation does not address climate change. I appreciate the work that the task force did. In their April 24th draft, they did draw the connection between carbon buildup in our atmosphere and land use and our major our growth patterns and how they affect climate change. They even went on to say one goal for the Big Look is to make land use an integral part in achieving greenhouse gas reduction targets. I don't know what happened. This legislation has none of this. I must say that climate change will become the number one challenge facing our nation during the next 50 to 100 years. We are now and will continue to live deeper and deeper into an energy and carbon-constrained future. If the mission of the Big Look is truly to prepare Oregon's land use for the future and not to be simply a glance in the rearview mirror, this legislature must take the courage that greatness demands and embrace the challenges of climate change. And I would suggest that you look at some of the following areas here. The role of compact cities and public transportation to reduce vehicle miles. That should be part of land use planning. Impact of development proposals on carbon loading or reductions in the atmosphere. And this includes rewards for development plans that are efficient and do reduce carbon. Assurance to developers of wind farms about siting and view sheds and priorities for low transmission utility lines to get out to these farms that are going to be set way out in the hinterland. I'm a native Oregonian. My grandfather lived in a time when there were no limits to resources. We have completely seen that turn around. We have a history in this state, and we depend on you to do what's necessary. Thank you.
Thanks for traveling this far to come give us your ideas. Mr. McCarthy?
Thank you. I'm a farmer from Hood River County. My wife and I raise apples.
Name and county, please.
Excuse me. Mike McCarthy, Hood River County. My wife and I raise apples, pears, and cherries on about 300 acres in the Parkdale area. We also raise cattle, hay, and timber. I've been involved in land use planning since 1980. And I'd like to talk today about two things. First, the ineffectiveness of local or regional control on protecting farm and forest land. And secondly, the problem of allowing houses in what some people might want to call low productivity or marginal farm areas. On the first one, on local or regional control, in Hood River County, I've been involved, like I said, for 30 years, and every time there's been an issue that's come up, whether to choose development or whether to site a house or whether to protect it for farm and forest land, if it's not officially mandated by the state in the land use planning regulations, the decisions are made to take farmland out of production. That's just been historically what's happened. And whether it's through like the high-value farmland mapping process, which had some discretion built into it, whether it's through Goal 8 mapping process, or whether it's through just the individual siting of new dwellings, decisions are almost always made to take farmland out of production. As far as allowing houses in the marginal land areas, I don't think we need any more. We don't need any more houses in the farm zone. It creates helter-skelter development. One thing, lands that we might think today are marginal lands or poor lands in the future might be very important, and that's, for example, vineyard ground we thought was not of use now is very important. My own farms were classified as marginal lands, and now they're very much in demand for the late cherry market. So these lands that sometimes we don't think are really good can be used in the future for things that we can't imagine now. One is like compost yards. And another thing that's brand new is there's been recommendations that every farmer should have about 30% of his land just for the purpose of raising predatory insects and pollinating insects. And you've all heard about the bee problem. So there's many new uses for these lands that are coming up, and for people to say they're marginal or not useful is really not true to most of us that really want to farm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you also for making the trip from Hood River. Let's ask Polly Wood, Anne Marie Peer, and Ivan Molesky to the table. And on deck we'll have Amy Schoner or Schoner, Jonathan Gracca, and Albert Kaufman. Ms. Wood.
Okay. My name is Polly Wood. I'm from Hood River County, and I'm with the Hood River Valley Residents Committee. I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian and concerned about Sections 5 through 8 in this bill. And I'm wondering, how does the public benefit from lax regulation? I can see how bankers benefit. Look how much they paid themselves. Shall we relax what can be done in your neighbor's yard? Oregonians can be proud of their land use laws that have protected farm and forest land, contained urban sprawl, and managed growth better than has any other state. While I support some of the task force proposals, such as adopting better strategic plans and new performance measures, I do not support relaxing regulation when it means each county can define what constitutes farm and forest land. The counties have their own issues, many of which come down to budgets, shrinking timber payments, and the fact that, yes, people are fleeing the timber ghost towns for our vibrant cities. The counties are trying to win the population back by appealing to California-style development. Allowing cash-strapped counties to redefine farm and forest land is going to start a new land rush. Housing and strip mall tracts will go up in the way that green stuff is sprayed by the freeways. And nobody will get rich, because with all the new infrastructure, prices will be bid down. The counties will be paying for fire and police protection, road repair, sewer and water, and so forth. This could well cost the counties when they all open up to development and shift the supply curve to the right. This proposal to allow counties to redefine farm and forest land has not been thought through. It is an emotional decision driven by a desire for short-term financial gain, hatched by the people who want to convert the results of years of careful, conscientious planning to sprawl. It will urbanize rural areas, increase global warming population from more vehicles, and negatively impact Oregon's most valuable economic resources, which are agriculture land, forest land, and residential land. You can't eat from an office park, you can't live in a farm field, and there's no work in a clear cut. These areas are all well and objectively defined now. Blurring their boundaries does not add to the well-being of the state or its residents now and into the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Peer.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Anne Marie Peer, and we are farmers in South Salem, Marion County. The fact of life is that growth is inevitable. Our generation of youths are moving out of the area in search of opportunities and a future that they can count on, not what their ancestors aspired to. I've lived in California and witnessed that in the last 30 years, smart farmers and landowners in urban areas sold their low-quality lands and turned the San Joaquin Valley into an agricultural leading industry for this nation. Californians did not lose their land to eight-lane highways. They created mega agricultural industries. Meanwhile, the negative mentality of the no-growth proponents deprived the city of Berkeley, yet adjacent cities who move with the times, grew and benefited their communities by large. For the past 3 years, we've been working towards getting a permit from the county to allow a one-farmer-occupied home on 110 acres in an SA zoning with predominantly low-quality soil, no irrigation, and high-slope hillside. Originally, there had been 3 homes on this property since the 1920s, and they were removed in the process of replacement. Finally, the Board of Commissioners approved our single-home application, but an adjacent neighbor appealed before LUBA. The attorney from the Goal One Coalition Group drafted and demanded substantial amount of money and terms in return for her client's removal of the appeal. We found this to be extortion and refused to pay. The existing land use laws have many vague areas, errors, loopholes, and unfairness. I hope the Big Looks Task Force have concluded their mission to address these issues and, more importantly, prevent these extortionists in our communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is Ivan Molesky in the room?
No, he's in the other another hearing.
Okay, so I'll move him to the bottom. Thank you, Ms. Lynch. Thank you. May we bring Amy Schoner?
Shaner.
My apologies.
It's okay.
Jonathan Gracca and Albert Kaufman. Ms. Shaner?
My name is Amy Shaner. I'm from Benton County, and I'm speaking for myself, but I actually have a background since I served, I'm presently serving on the Benton County Planning Commission, and I also have a 63-acre farm in Benton County. I really want to say that I'm here to remind you that there are regulations that the county has and ways to change zoning in our county. I've sat on hearings and I've made decisions myself that way, so we already have those regulations. I'm very much afraid that if the counties in the state are allowed to make their own designations of what is farmland and what is forest land, we will have major changes, and that's not to the benefit of either forests or the farms. As a farmer, I would like to say that it's really hard to have development encroach on your peripheral areas for various reasons. I have fruit, I have sheep, and if you have adjacent development, it's a lot harder because of the farming noises and smells, and also the fact that oftentimes there are animal pets that are harmful to the farm animals. So I'm hoping that you'll take these remarks in consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gracca?
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, my name is Jonathan Graca, and I'm the executive director of the Hood River Valley Residents Committee. We are a 30-year-old land use nonprofit, and our mission is protecting farm and forest land in Hood River County. Section 5 through 8 that would allow counties to develop new criteria to redefine farm and forest land for development not only lacks adequate research, but would be a giant step backwards for Oregon's land use system. And I want to talk about two reasons for that today. Number one, it would destabilize the agricultural industry in counties like Hood River, where the number one revenue generator is agriculture. It brings in about $80 to $100 million every year. Hood River County is the second smallest county, yet, as you can see on the graphs on the what I presented to you there, it's only about 3.5% of the land base. The ag industry in Hood River County is also facing other threats like Measure 49, UGB expansion, and population expansion, which is supposed to go, the city of Hood River is supposed to go from 6,500 to 10,000 in the next 20 years. The agricultural industry relies on having operation scale packing houses and suppliers, and the Big Look proposal to redefine farm and forest land would bite away at an already small land base. The second reason I wanted to discuss was that Section 5 through 8 would increase sprawl and thus greenhouse gases. Senate Bill 3543 that was passed in 2007 was ambitious. It said the greenhouse gases would be reduced by 70% below 1990 levels by 2050. Transportation is 40%, or accounts for 40% of greenhouse gases in Oregon, and sprawl is a leading contributor. To reach these goals, Oregon needs to be strengthening our land use system, not weakening it. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Albert Kaufman, and I live in Multnomah County. I'm here speaking for myself. I've been watching the Big Look Task Force move through time and space and present their various findings for the last however long they've been working. And I just have to say it's been a very saddening experience for me. I lived in New Jersey growing up and watched as subdivision after subdivision came in everywhere around me. And when I was a teenager, I didn't really know better, and I didn't know how to speak up or how to do anything to change it. As I became a young adult, I stepped up and tried to comment on it. I ended up moving to Germany, where I lived in a few different places, and noticed that they had some really strong land use laws there. I can't express in 2 minutes what a wonderful experience it was to live in a place where people thought about land use so carefully. About 7 years ago, I moved to Portland and have had the very lucky experience of living in a place which is, for the United States, the leader in terms of land use law. And this last couple of years, watching the Big Look Task Force take a real shot at these laws has really been very saddening to me. I think of Oregon as a place that leads on a lot of different fronts, and I would like to continue to live in a place that leads in this area. I am very much against redefining Oregon's farm and forest lands. I do think it opens the door to sprawl by weakening statewide protections, and I appreciate your work on the topic.
Thank you all. Thank you very much. Okay, on deck. Did we have an on deck list? Okay. May we call to the witness table Kent Ziegler, John Messer, and Linda Ludwig. On deck, we'll have Andra Brosi, Vern Ratzlaff, and Carl Schmidt. Mr. Ziegler.
Right. Hi, my name is Kent Ziegler. I live in Clackamas County. I've lived in the state of Oregon all my life. I've lived in Clackamas County now for over 50 years. And the reason I'm here is I'm focusing in on Section 17 that has to do with the annexation of all land that is located within present urban growth boundaries that they need to be annexed into the city. I was actively involved back in 2002 when Metro looked at what areas could possibly be added to urban growth boundaries in the Portland area. I attended numerous public hearings with Planning Commission, City Council, and my main area was in Park Place of Oregon City. After four discussions with the Planning Commission City Council members, certain land areas were designated and they were brought in. From that point forward, over the last 5 years, I have personally attended over 30 neighborhood outreach discussions and meetings and city public hearings with planning commissions and city council members to determine what our next approach would be in coming up with a final plan. After over $1 million has now been spent by Metro and the city with their staff, they unanimously approved a concept plan last year for the expansion area. The only step we still had to do was to go through what was called voter annexation on a citywide ballot. Unfortunately, it went down. And here, after that huge investment, the city, which was planning their growth in this area, and we, the affected property owners, were stuck. We're in limbo, and we just don't know what to do next. So I highly recommend in House Bill 2229 that you add language that basically all land that's located within the urban growth boundary shall be annexed to the cities, and that the antiquated voter annexation requirement would be removed so that cities could move forward and plan for their growth. To me, it's just key that this waste of taxpayer money is removed. It's just going to continue to cost millions of dollars, and the cities need to be able to plan. They need to be able to create jobs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we have Mr. Messer.
Hi, I'm John Messer from Polk County. I speak only for myself. For the last 30 years, our family has lived at the same address in rural Polk County. And over that 30 years, we've seen lots of changes. We've seen lots of new agricultural businesses come in, large Christmas tree shipping operation, Christmas wreath operation, excavation company, a stable, lots and lots of vineyards, which have gone in on what at one time would have been judged marginal land. At the same time, the farms that were there when we got there are pretty much all still there. They've really done pretty well. The chicken ranch is much larger. The hay shipping operation is a new business. The Filberts are doing real well. The rancher next to us has a larger herd of cattle and raises more grass seed. At the same time, there have been a number of houses that have been built. These haven't been particularly intrusive. They seem to fit in. My point is that the current system has allowed all of these things to go forward. And I think before you choose to disrupt the current system too violently, you need to think pretty carefully that it has worked well and perhaps doesn't need to be completely revamped. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Ludwig?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Linda Ludwig from the League of Oregon Cities. I'm trying to make my comments incredibly brief and having a very difficult time doing that. To that end, I've passed out a letter that went to the final Big Look committee addressing some of the changes to HB 2229. It was a different LC number. The content is the same. I put the LC on the back because the lines and the page numbers are a little bit different, but let me address a couple of things. From our perspective, whether you agree with them or not, there's some very interesting information in this report from the Big Look Committee, the final report. However, it's our thought that the legislation in the bill does not do a very good job of implementing this report. It hits on a couple of concepts, but it doesn't do justice to any of them yet in the bill. To that end, I want to talk just a little bit about the, you've heard a lot about the county option for remap or rezone. We are silent on that policy issue. However, we do have some real concerns that the addition of that work under the concentration of periodic review assistance is inappropriate. My letter addresses that. We've worked hard and long in the 1999 session, 2005 session, 2007 session to narrow down the scope of periodic review, and the resources that are available today actually match the periodic review program. So we have some concern with that. The prioritization in Section 15 of state grants, of grant funds, first all state agencies to support infill redevelopment and also to support the four new planning principles, we would recommend that that language be stricken. We don't believe it's able to be implemented as it's written, and we don't also believe we have many cities that would be eligible to receive loan funds or grant funds for purposes that could be broadly construed as infrastructure that would not be able to prioritize infill and redevelopment. Section 1617, the annexation of new territory brought into the UGB, we suggest a thorough vetting of that policy and the development of needed processes before the committee would move forward with that, perhaps a work group effort, perhaps an interim effort. Section 18, the recommendation to reduce complexity, we think that's a great recommendation. We have some concerns that LCDC is going to appoint the work group. We saw with the Big Look Committee them having a bump for quite a period of time with a lot of agency for oversight at the initial part of that work. We believe it should be a more neutral group that would make that appointment. We believe that's important for the legislative process, for local governments, and for the citizens as well. Perhaps looking at the Secretary of State's office or just another group to handle that we think would be important. Lastly, and I'm really fast, what's missing in the bill and is in the report is the infrastructure component. Doing research and finding a long-term infrastructure strategy for cities. We have some recommended language we gave to the Big Look Committee. We are more than happy to talk at length to the committee about this in the future.
Thank you. And it's very helpful that you have given a specific section-by-section piece. If you do have specific language, and I'll extend this invitation to everyone,
If you have specific language you would propose to insert in lieu of or in addition to language in the bill, if you can get that to Ms. Ross or Mr. Hoyt, it will be available to the committee and we'll deliberate on any specific language that anyone wants to recommend. Thank you. This is helpful. Appreciate all of your advice. Andra Brosi, Vern Retzloff, and Carl Schmidt. The only other person I would have on deck, and this will be great because this will about fill our time till 4 o'clock, will be Mr. Molesky if he returns.
My name is Andra Brosi. I live in Multnomah County, and I speak on my own behalf. Chair Mary Nolan, members of the House Land Use Committee, I thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm here because I'm a native Oregonian. I grew up right here in the Willamette Valley in Salem, and I want our beautiful, productive agricultural lands to be preserved for future generations. I urge you to support the task force's proposal to develop a statewide strategic plan to integrate economic, social, and environmental trends. I also urge you to support the proposal to develop performance measures to evaluate each statewide planning goal's effectiveness. However, I urge you to reject the proposal to redefine farm and forest lands. I strongly believe that now, of all times, we must renew our call for healthier communities, a healthier environment, and most of all, a stronger, more effective land use system in Oregon. I'm here to represent the next generation of Oregonians because we know that the quality of our future is going to be determined by the choices that you make today. We know that agriculture is the backbone of Oregon's economy. It generates $5 billion annually in sales and produces 10% of jobs throughout the state. We also know that Oregon's pioneering approach to land use is an incredibly valuable asset, and it's definitely one that we want to preserve for our children. We also know that climate change will be the challenge for our generation, and we know that any reforms to our land use system that open the door to urban sprawl will seriously jeopardize the health of all Oregonians. And so, as a young person who grew up here in Oregon, I urge you to reject the proposal to redefine farm and forest lands. I'd like to remind you that the health and well-being of future Oregonians is in your hands. You have the ability to strengthen our land use system and ensure a thriving, livable state for years to come. Please base your decision on what you know is best for future Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done. Mr. Ratzloff?
Vern Ratzloff, Polk County, Oregon. I've spent my life farming and foresting, and at one point bought some 5-acre parcels that from some land that was zoned 5 acres next to our farm, so we could hopefully control the use of that land next to our farm. So I've kind of been involved with several aspects, and the thing that I'm, and I'd like to address the House bill a little later, but what I'm seeing is that every town or city that I know of in Oregon is along a stream. If it's along a stream, it's in a valley. If it's in a valley, there are very productive, in most cases, very productive soils along that stream. And from that stream, from that valley, we usually have some hill ground that joins that, goes up to higher elevation. The best farmland that we have is along those streams in most cases. And what I see going on is that there are not enough restrictions that pertain to the urban growth boundary expansions. Developers like deep, flat soil, burying infrastructure and putting in roads and so forth. And I think if we look back over 30-some years of our land use planning, we see that, wow, time goes fast. I see that that if anything, we haven't protected our prime soils well enough, and we've argued about our hill soils. And the definition of, I'm talking about prime soil, now I'm going to talk about high-value soil. The definition of high-value soil says that it's class 1 through 4 soils, and that includes alluvial and hill. And my suggestion is that we change that and add one word and put in the word alluvial, and eliminate the hill and take the pressure off the prime farmland.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Schmidt?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carl Schmidt, Marion County. Comments at the last meeting in February 3 included recommendations about giving counties more control. I don't think that really matters. What really matters is whether or not we actually want to provide fairness and equity, which is in Section 1D of this bill. If we do, then we need to provide compensation or return property rights that were taken from certain property owners. Given the current economic environment, the best solution is to return property rights as Measure 37 intended. This will provide an economic boost to our economy and will not destroy our state as depicted in the clever advertisement by the proponents of Measure 49. Rural developments don't look like that, not even close. A more realistic representation would have been to create a state map showing all of the development plats, 1-2% of the land area of the state, dispersed in the privately owned areas of the state. It might require a magnifying glass to find most of those properties. There has never been any real evidence to support the need to curtail rural development to the degree that has occurred since 73. In fact, rural development has apparently continued for some property owners, given that according to the Department of Water Resources, 5,000 or more domestic wells have been drilled every year for many years. Mm-hmm. Why? Somebody should take a look at that, I think. When Measure 37 was passed, a process was created to allow property owners to submit claims for compensation. The result of that process was a granting of waivers to develop the property because the state needed to use all available revenue for other programs. The governor and legislature then set in motion the process to rescind those waivers. That process succeeded and effectively left many claimants bearing the tax costs of those programs that were considered more important than compensation for lost property rights. That's really what's been happening. And I appreciate the opportunity to make these comments. There's written information that covers this in more detail.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Thank you all. That completes our sign-up sheet. Is Mr. Molesky in the room yet? Last call for Mr. Molesky. Is there anyone who wanted to testify who didn't have a chance to sign up on any of our sheets? Seeing none, members, I'll remind you we will recess this hearing until 6 o'clock so that we can hear testimony from people who couldn't be here during the business day. We will not meet in this room, however.
I got it.
At 6 o'clock we will convene in room A.
You have
down the hall. The Ways and Means Subcommittees are meeting in this room, I think. So we will recess until 6 o'clock in the hearing room A. thank you.
We've been given the boot.
No.